Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to a special episode of Morelia Python Radio, brought to you by Morelia Python Forums, www.moreliapythons.com. Yes, we have a special announcement for you tonight, here on this Friday night. What's going on, Owen? How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. It's weird talking to you people on Fridays.
Like we have anything better to do. Come on.
I know. Hey, unlike you, you married person, I'm a young guy. Yeah, you're right. I got nothing else to do.
just admit it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll admit it openly now. It's over.
So tonight we have a special announcement to the Morelia Python world, and we are going to be joined by Jason Hoffner, Dave mm-hmm. Kelly, and Andrew mm-hmm. Paris is coming.
Holy crap! Three people at once.
Yeah, and then after we do the announcement, we're going to do a roundtable discussion about a couple of different issues. One would be Cullen, and Dave already said before the show that he's going to annihilate us callers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay.
They're chomping at the bit right now because they're all on mute and they're not able to.
Wolves, all of them.
What is that in the background? Are you playing a or something? You gotta...
possibly a train. Don't worry about it. I don't need to tell you where I am.
Oh, fair
the
enough.
The important thing is that I called in.
That is true. True. I just wanted to throw out a happy birthday to Zach Baez. He is... I have no idea. I think he's probably like 20 years old or something like that, but happy birthday to him. And I guess without further ado, we'll bring everybody on and get this announcement going. So I'll bring on Jason. Let's see. Jason?
Push the button.
There you are.
I'm still here.
Yes, he's
good.
Here. Dave is here. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Hey, guys.
And we have Andrew. Let me get him on there. He's taking a little longer. There he is. Andrew, you there?
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Hey, how's it going? So, I guess the announcement is for the world of Australia is that... Wait a minute. Somebody's, like, deep breathing into their phone. What are you doing, Owen?
Nothing.
Owen, we don't want to know what you're doing
waiting for you.
We are announcing the start of a new project that we have undertaken, and it is called Morelia Python's Magazine. Somebody is
awesome.
really loud. Who is it? Is it you, Jason?
Probably me. Probably.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm muting myself, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Come in and out, Jay. So, yeah, it's an idea that I believe, Andrew, maybe you can touch on. You posted up a picture of a magazine cover and thought it would be a cool idea, and I think it kind of started from you, correct?
It sort of started with – I hope you guys will bear with me. My voice
yeah.
Is sort of had it this week, but I can't take full credit for it. There's another breeder who we know and love, Mr. Chris Bioff. He got in touch with someplace online where you can plug in pictures and fonts and text and stuff like that and sort of make up a mock magazine. And he posted it up just as sort of a joke or a prank or something cool. And, I thought, heck, you know, I've been doing Photoshop for years and I used to do it for a living. And so I'll see if I can make up, you know, a mock draft real quick spent about an hour on it and put it up on my Paris Reptiles Facebook page and, you know, got some good responses. And I said, well, you know, guys, this is just a joke. You know, this is fake. And you know, people thought it was real. And several people said, hey, you know, that's a killer idea. And it sort of went from there.
Right. So then I think Jason came on board with you at that point, and I think I had talked to you, and I think Chris was involved. And the idea kind of sat out there for a while, and we were all gung-ho about it, and then it kind of, like, lost touch a bit. And then I think Jason and Dave, you're there, I guess you guys hooked up, and then I guess Jason reached out to me, and then we started this ball rolling again, correct?
That's right.
Yep, and then...
Yeah, I just kind of onto there. Yeah, I just kind of came with Eric, so...
yeah. And then Andrew came back on board, and I think Andrew, with the four of us, or how many is there, that the idea is that we're going to make a – well, go ahead, Dave. Why don't you hit on it? Why don't you throw it out there?
Well, I guess we're all just – we're passionate about Morelia, and we all have a bunch of free time. So why not put all that free time and love of Morelia to use and do something for the community? I mean –
yeah, it's kind of like I kind of looked at it like an extension of, you know, when Morelia Python Forums was around, Morelia Python Radio kind of was an extension of the forum because you could hear the people that, you know, were posting on the forum. You could hear them live and give interviews and, you know, you could ask questions back and get a good discussion going. And this is sort of like... to me, at least, it's like sort of the trifecta of, you know, of Morelia media, I guess you would say, you know. I think that we lost Owen. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, that's no biggie. We can keep going.
He'll probably call back in.
Owen's easily lost. It's okay.
Me personally, I'm really excited about the idea. I think it's long overdue. I think that people will really take to it. I don't know what you guys think, what's going on in the world of carpet pythons and Morelia, but I know on my end, I see numbers of the show. I see a growing interest. I was talking to Jason Balin the other day, and he was saying that same thing, that he noticed that there's an increase interest in the genus. So, you know, I'm pretty excited about it, and I hope that, you know, we're going to do it annually. We're going to try to we kind of decided that it was going to be – we're going to do it as it comes out. But the first one we're shooting for is in October, right?
Yes.
Right, at Tinley Park, at Carpet Row. What better place to introduce something like that? I guess anything else you wanted to hit, like Andrew, anything that you wanted to hit on?
Yeah, I actually just wanted to just to express my appreciation to you guys, to be honest. You know, I had a lot of good ideas right off the bat and, you know, put it up on the forum just to see if I could field, you know, ideas from everybody else and gauge what the interest would be. And I especially want to give a shout out to Jason here because you know, my life has been – I've been a little bit MIA on the forums and on Facebook recently. Life's just been super busy, and you know, once every few weeks, Jason's been, you know, hitting me up, asking questions and sort of, you know, staying consistent with it. And, you know, Eric, you and David, you know, you guys responded right away and said that, you know, you'd help out any way that you could. And, you know, I had been telling Jason for a while now that I just, you know, with everything that I got, that I have going on my plate, I could not see, you know, spearheading this. I couldn't see heading it up and just organizing everything and taking full responsibility. But, you know, now that I see that, you know, we got a group of, you know, committed people and people who are passionate about this, you know, it's a lot easier to shoulder it together than it is, you know, just one person. So it's going to happen. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I did talk to I got a couple pretty good breeders and keepers, and I don't know how you guys have made out, but pretty much signed up to do articles and such. So I don't know if we're ready to announce that yet, but they're on board, and I think it's going to be – I think we were kind of talking about it being the perfect mix of like – you don't want it to be Reptiles magazine, but you don't want it to be a scientific paper. You want it to be, you know, somewhere in the middle to where.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Well, the way that I saw it and that I've always sort of envisioned it is, you know, a magazine that will connect the Morelia fan base, you know, all of the breeders and hobbyists, you know, people who do this for fun, people who do it for a living. You know, everybody who's on the forums, everybody who listens to this radio show, something that's going to connect us all, something that's informative and professional and yet not, you know, overly stuffy, something that's entertaining and fun. You know, I don't think any of us want something that's, you know, too elementary and basic. But by the same token, we don't want it to be, you know, just a straight out, you know, academic journal either. So I think we'd all like to see some variety. I think the fan base would want variety. So, you know, my hope is to make this something that no one wants to miss. You know, every single, every article, every single edition is going to be something that, you know, that people are going to love to read and look forward to.
Absolutely. I think it's just another thing to, you know, it's kind of cool in a way that I say this all the time about bringing those underrated, often overlooked species of pythons or snakes in general into the limelight that, you know, it's not a ball python or, you know, something like that, that people can learn to appreciate. I think we have a show booked in 2 weeks. It's just about carpet python myths, just debunking them and letting people know, you know, like new people. I get them emailing me every day asking questions about, you know, I thought carpet pythons need humidity and scrub pythons and chondros and all those different things that people are afraid to jump into that species because they really don't know about it. So I think it's a great idea to have something like this because now people can be educated about it, and it's not a leopard gecko or a ball python or a bearded dragon, you know? So, yep. How about you, Jason? You got any thoughts or input? Or?
I mean, I think Andrew really hit on everything. I mean, when I first saw the picture, I think I pestered Andrew pretty bad about getting this started because I just thought it was a great idea and I thought we needed it. So, I mean, and then we just kind of moved forward. As he said, things kind of got a little hectic, get pushed aside, but I just wanted to always kind of keep the idea going. So when I kind of came to the point where it was, okay, we really need to get this moving because I think this is something we need, that's when I started reaching out to David and I reached out to you, Eric, and that was when everything started really snowballing. And I'm truly excited about the progress that's going on right now.
Yeah, I think my quote was, it's going to happen whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I think so. That was your quote.
Yeah, whether you like it or not. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about it, and I think it'll be very, very cool and, you know, something else to take up my time. So, should be good times. Anything else that you guys wanted to hit on before we?
You know, there is one thing that I'd like to mention.
Sure.
for anybody who is not over on Morelia Pythons and a part of that community, I would definitely suggest going over there and, you know, and signing up or, you know, perusing through there. There's just a wealth of information over there. But specifically, you know, do a search for the thread. I could even start a thread this evening. But, you know, we're doing this because we feel like it's going to be a hit for the entire fan base. We're not doing this just for the four of us. We're doing this for all of you listeners out there. And so, honestly, I would really appreciate and value your feedback. You know, what do you want to see in the magazine? You know, what is not out there now that needs to be out there? You know, what do we need to cover? What would be interesting? What would be helpful and informative? So your feedback will go a long way. So I'll make sure that I start that thread this evening.
Awesome. Very cool. And, you know, I think we probably had talked at one point that maybe there's even an idea of branching off into, you know, some Australian, Indonesian type of pythons, you know, that don't get any love type of thing.
Let's not get too crazy.
But, yeah, I think that's a great idea. And, yeah, make sure you go over there and, like you said, check out it's www.moreliapythons.com. Can't forget that. So anything else? Anything else you guys want to – before we start beating each other up?
I think Andrew hit it pretty well in the head.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, stay tuned. I guess if you're interested in maybe, you know, like you said – I don't know if you're a breeder that's been on the show, or maybe you have an article that you wanted to share with the world. I mean, you can always send it to. I guess for now, you can send it to. You can either message us on Facebook individually, or you could send it to info@moreliapythonsradio.com, and we can check it out. You know, and I think that thread over there is. Awesome idea. Now, as far as the whole round table discussion of topics, I guess for me personally, I'm kind of the guy that's kind of into the whole carpet complex, so I kind of sit on the fence. And I know, Jason, you're kind of a pure subspecies type of guy. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I do have a couple months, but I really do like each individual subspecies as its own.
And what about you, Dave?
Oh, we talked about that a little bit in the planning stages, and I think I referred to myself as more of a quality person over purity or designer. So as long as it looks nice, comes from great lineage, I'll take it.
Okay. How about you, Andrew? Where do you fit in that equation?
I'm actually typing up the thread right now, so I'm completely ignoring you. What was the question?
Go for it. I was saying, where do you fit in as far as you keeping carpets and Morelia? Are you a pure subspecies guy, a morph guy? What?
You know, I love the genus. You know, I've got a little bit of everything. I guess my love and what got me into this in the first place, I love jungles. I just love jungles. The simplicity, you know, of just your jungle carpet python. I love all the different lines. And I guess I would like to say that I want to be as purist as possible when it comes to those. But I know that, you know, nowadays just about anything in the States, it's becoming increasingly difficult, you know, to find something that you could truly call, you know, pure. But, you know, I've got jungle jags. I've got, you know, I've got a zebra. I've got, you know, a bunch of stuff. So I'm sort of all over the board on that.
Okay. So I guess the you know, Dave, I think you posted up a thread, and maybe you could start the question on that thread that you posted up about the whole culling and crossing and what do you do with the sibs and the –
Okay, sure. So I kind of acted a little aggressive in that thread, and the main reason is we're all in this because we love carpet pythons, And with all the mixing and all the cool motors that are out there, we are now making what some people are starting to see as byproduct, which kind of disturbs me. I mean, we created living animals, and because they don't live up to their morph counterparts, like, a lot of people have decided to call the offspring, feed them to black-headed pythons or monitor lizards or whatever, lead carpet pythons, because they see it helps that animal. But what really bothered me was the intent behind it. If you're going to call a mixed animal, then maybe you should just call the entire mixed clutch morph and all. I mean, at least then the entire clutch was used for food. But to look at a morph and say, like, you're more of what I want, I like you, like, you have more value, and then look at the normal mixed offspring and then say, you don't have as much value and I don't really want to try to work with you, off the fish or off the blackhead, whatever, it just really bothered me.
Yeah, I think my thought on that is, and I can comment on this, my thought is this, is that what scares me is that when you do a pairing, I have sibs to granite jacks, or offspring from making granite jacks. So the IJ coastal mix het granites that I have, they serve my purpose because I'm trying to make more granite jacks. So I don't pass them off as IJs. I never post up pictures of them, but I have two of them, and they're females, and I plan on breeding them to a granite jag to make more granite jags and refine what a granite jag would look like. However, what scares me about that is the fact that I love IJs. And when I look at an IJ and I think of the selective breeding that's, you know, taking place and going forward, what's going to happen, because I think it ties into that whole thing with the lineage that you had talked about. I think that if we did a better job at keeping lineage, then it would be much easier for us, I think, to tell what is a pure quote-unquote line as opposed to a sibling of a mutt cross, I guess you would say. But they kind of look alike. And to the average keeper or somebody that wants to come along, you know, that kind of screws up, like, someone like Andrew, who is really into just keeping his jungle a pure line. You know what I mean? Can you see that side of it? Or?
Oh, no, I absolutely see that side of it. It's I guess my feeling towards that then becomes, like, if you begin to have that problem and you have to wrestle with, can I see value in that animal? Do I worry about, like, what I am doing? Do I feel guilty about producing mutts? Should I really be doing the pairing in the first place? Because those granite jags, like, you're going to sell those probably, unless, you know, you hoard them all, which you might do anyway. If you sell those granite jags are going to make more sibs or normals. I mean, it's a never-ending chain. So if you feel guilty with, like, just selling those morphs, even though you've called those normal animals, like, well, does it really change anything? I mean, you've culled a couple animals, but you're still part of the problem. And if you see a problem in your mind.
I don't see a problem in the mind, because I know that myself, when I have different projects, like, I have my projects that are necessarily made for keeping a line pure. And I don't even know if they are pure. I'm just going to say pure lines, you know, what we say are pure in the States. I guess it just, you know, and the other flip side of that is that, you know, for guys that do keep their stuff pure, like if Jason just breeds IJ to IJ, you know, his lines are always going to be known for being that and not messed up. So then if you're looking for that, you're going to go to a guy like him. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know. I see both sides of it, and I guess it's one of those things that there's no right or wrong, at least in my mind. But see, I have all kinds of crosses, all kinds of mixes, all kinds of mutts, and all kinds of, morphs and stuff. But I've picked out those siblings specifically for a reason, to breed to something to refine a better carpet python. But don't you think that as the hobby is in a way that if it's not flashy, then people are not going to take notice of it, which is a shame.
Absolutely. But I guess where I come from at that point is maybe we should be selectively breeding these mixes better than we are. I mean, don't just make the Granite Jack, make the best damn Granite Jack you can. I mean, try to make, and then make nice siblings along the way, which can then be used for Erie and Jaya Jaguar projects. Use them for your Granite Jack projects. I mean, they can use them for, I don't know, jungle Erie and Jaya Jaguars. Those are hot. I mean, those mixes can take the place, if they look nice, of the normal Erie and Jayas that are going to be used for mixes. See where I'm coming from there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to a certain extent, we kind of agree. But I just look at it, I don't know. It's kind of like one of those things where I kind of go back and forth.
Here's the way that my dad and I, he calls me, and we'll talk about this for a while since he keeps carpets too. And the one way I try to look at it is I've had that female breed that year. I've had her go through all the trouble of, you know, developing eggs, maternally incubating them because that's what I like to do. And now I'm going to take half of her offspring and that she worked for months over to ensure that they hatch and then toss into a black-headed python. And I part of me just feels like that's wrong to the female. You know, I've had her work so hard for nothing.
I've got my blackhead ready to go. I'm totally teasing.
Good to hear, Andrew.
I do, though.
Yeah. Is that why you have blackhead pythons?
It's actually not why I have a blackhead python, but I do have one.
Yeah, I have one, too, and I kind of, you know, I did. There was some, actually this year, it was more of messed up siblings that I had. I had some.
I do want to add, I'm fine with that in every possible way. If an animal hatches out with a genetic deformity into the blackhead, that is completely different from culling normal offspring.
Are you talking about Owen?
What? Culling Owen? What?
That might be useful.
I guess I'm just afraid of, you know, have you been to a reptile show and you're standing on the other side of the booth and you're the breeder guy and you hear some of the things that people are coming up and saying and it's just like they're going to breed something for the sake of breeding it. You know what I mean? There's no thought or anything behind what they're doing. And they're just going to find the cheapest snake that they can get and put it together, and they're going to make what they call Erie and Jayas or jungle carpets, throw it up on the Kingsnake page and sell it, and some newbie that's coming into the hobby is going to feel duped. You know, like, oh, I thought this was a pure jungle carpet, and, you know, then he goes over to the forum and everybody beats him up because it's some kind of cross. I'm not saying that they're not beautiful. I mean, if you saw on the Morelia Python Facebook page, I was not against, but not something that I personally would do would breed inlands to Jags, because when I saw the pictures of how it turned out from some of the Australia stuff, I didn't really see the point. It didn't make a nicer Jag, but the siblings are nicer than the Jag, you know? They are. I wonder if I can repost that pic. Hold on, let me see if I can find it. I put it up on the thing, but I guess it kind of makes your point, Dave.
Well, and I want to touch on your point about the people at the reptile show. You know, the misinformed breeder to the misinformed buyer. And here's the thing. People suck. And and that's just the truth. People will...
We can end the show on that note.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. Rock and roll. But people will breed what they want to, mislabel it intentionally or, you know, unintentionally, who knows. But, you know, it's a confusing species, and people, not everybody's as passionate about it as us. I mean, even if we were working with pure jungles or pure coastals and pure energies and pure diamonds, no mixes, well, what's going to happen to the ugly jungles? Well, those are coastals now. What's going to happen to a nice banded coastal that might have a little bit more yellow to it? Oh, it's a lower yellow jungle. See what I'm getting at? It's a completely
right.
Species. It was a very variable appearance, and things get mixed up.
But that's kind of what makes them so cool.
Right, but I mean, we can't just blame the normal offspring from a a pairing from that. And maybe I got a little bit off the topic there because I am jazzed on espresso right now and my mind's going 30,000 different ways.
Yeah,
but it made sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I don't know. That's kind of a – how about you, Jason? Where do you fit into that since you're the pure guy? What are your thoughts?
Okay, I mean, you kind of touched on it with the whole inland jag thing. I mean, inlands in the States, they're kind of rare right now. And all we need is someone who can afford one inland and, ooh, I have a jag. I'm going to breed it to this. They produce a whole bunch of inlands, like 50-50 inlands, and they just sell the SIDs, and someone thinks they just bought an inland. And now we've got something that's not an inland entering into a limited market as it is. And it's just a problem of people being duped to believe, because I've been to the shows, I mean, and people will breed anything with anything and hope it sells. I've watched that, I don't know how many times, helping Owen out at the shows or whatever. I mean, I've had people come to me, oh, will this breed with my ball python? Will this breed with my red tail boa? Go away. It's all tellies.
Yes, it will.
But, I mean, you're sitting here, yes, I get the point of making all the pretty designer morphs. Yes, we live in a morph-driven culture when it comes to snakes. I mean, if you look at the ball pythons, that's why ball pythons are appealing. They come in every color of the rainbow, and that's why everybody loves them. I can't stand the freaking things, but whatever. Carpets, yes, okay. Yes, now we're producing sun glows. We're producing ghosts. And we're starting to catch up on the whole designer morph game, but then do we really want to leave the purity behind on everything? Because, I mean, we do have some awesome pure morphs. I mean, look at the zebras. The potential, the future potential of zebras is amazing. I mean, I was just on the forums talking to Nick, and he was talking about an ivory zebra project. Yeah, it's going to take generations to do, but the final outcome is going to be something spectacular.
You know, if I can break in here, that's one thing where I think we have a corner on the market. I think whatever the hobbyist wants to do, I think there's an opportunity to do with Morelia, and specifically with carpet pythons. You know, if you want to go the purest route, you know, if you want to just work on lineages, you can do that. But if you're the ball python guy who wants something a little bit different but can't get away from morphs, we've got that too, you know. So whichever way you want to look at it, you can go there. Can the ball python guys do that? You know, I mean, do they care at all about lineage? Do they care at all about – no, I mean, it's all morphs. It's all passing along genes and, you know, trying to make big bucks. So, you know, I think we've got something for everybody here. So it's exciting.
Well, see, that's what kind of worries me, because of the making the big bucks and everything like that, that we're going to lose sight of the pure lines. So, yeah, that's why I can see feeding the undesirables, as David puts them, to the blackheads. But as long as you're being used as food, it's being used as food. If you're just throwing them in the freezer just because it's what you're doing to get rid of them, that's horrible.
I think there's a little bit of a difference, though, because I don't think your average Morelia guy or gal, you know, I don't think your average Morelia breeder or hobbyist has that same sort of, you know, mentality or outlook or, you know, big business drive, you know, that the ball market does. So I don't think it would ever get to that point, you know, with Morelia. I think it's still exclusive enough.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there that I don't think that carpet pythons will or Morelia will ever get to the level that ball pythons are. I don't know if anything ever will. But with that being said, I think that the cool thing is that, you know, Andrew, you hit on a perfect thing, and that's where I'm at in this. This is what got me into the hobby. I can appreciate, you know, a Michael Pinnell Coastal. I can, you know, really get into, you know, Johnny Blaze Jungle. But on the flip side, I also like Carmel Zebra Jacks. You know what I'm saying? I just really like, and I like siblings. I have a striped Coastal Diamond thing you know, I think is one of the coolest carpets out there. I bought it for $60. The guy was selling it, and, you know, he didn't even want it. And he sold it to me for $60. I think it's one of the coolest snakes I have in my collection. To other people, they'll probably say, oh, that's a Diamond Coastal Cross. But when I go to put that into, you know, if I'm trying to make some kind of morph that's striped and I want, you know, maybe I want a little bit of diamond blood in there, you know, I'm going to get that to come out. And I think, Dave, maybe that's what you're talking about, is like if you're going to breed those siblings, they do have value, you know. Some of them do. But then, you know, if you're just going to flood the market with these quote-unquote, you know, normal car or whatever you want to call them, mutt carpets, you know. But, you know, here's another thing. Is that a way to get that guy that maybe can't afford a Jag or can't afford a jungle Jag, zebra Jag, or, you know, an albino, that maybe you can get your feet wet with one of them, like a pet type of carpet python?
Oh,
what do you think about that?
That'd be a great first pet for somebody. A nice, healthy animal that comes from – I mean, it could look interesting. I mean, add a little coastal blood to an Irian Jaya, and, I mean, that could look a little wonky if you wanted to say it that way. Hey, yeah, put it in a cage. Get your feet wet. Learn how to take care of a carpet python. Grow your interest from there.
Yeah,
I can agree with that. I mean, my first was a coastal. I got it from Owen. I mean, and he's not anything special, but you know what? He was my first carpet. I got my feet wet with it, and I have no regrets about it. I mean, but as I said, once again, I have pure coastal. But I do see, Eric, I do see where you're coming from, like that cool cross that you have, making use of it. I think the problem that needs to be addressed, though, is not just selling a sib, but properly representing a sib.
Yeah, but how do you get everybody to be on board with that? I think that brings us to the next point, is the whole lineage thing. Dave, I think that was another topic that you hit on that kind of drives it home for me. I mean, I think that we need to take I'm going to speak for the carpet python people, need to take a little bit of what the chondro community does. And, you know, that's how I see my collection going, you know, knowing what the grandparents of my snakes are, whether they're whether they're morphs or normals, you know, subspecies. And keeping that lineage going with my collection, so that when somebody buys a snake from me, they're going to know as far back as I can go, even with a mixed, quote-unquote, mutt carpet, you know?
You know, I'd like to say something, too. I don't think that we as breeders and some of the hobbyists who have been doing this so long, I don't think we can underestimate the power of suggestion and what we choose to value. Because if we end up, you know, writing articles and posting pictures and, you know, talking on a radio show like this about all of it, about the variety, like we were talking about earlier, you know, if we talk about the morphs and value those, if we talk about, you know, the importance of keeping, you know, lineages intact, you know, and if we place a value, not just a monetary value, but, you know, a value that speaks of excitement, you know, and that you're enthusiastic about. If we portray them that way, you know, and place that value on them, people will tend to respond to that. And I think that as long as we keep, you know, valuing, you know, both the pure side and the morphs and the crosses and, you know, everything, but we keep them all intact, you know, I think there's going to be a market, an interest, and a following for all of those things.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Did you guys see that picture that I was talking about of that carpet that Deb King put up?
I did see that.
Yeah.
Oh, that wild-looking, like,
isn't that wild-looking
thing?
Yeah. That looks like it. That's there you go. That's a sibling right there. Is that something that you would call? I wouldn't call that.
Not at all.
No, it looks like a retic almost. You know, it's wild-looking.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that, Jason? Like,
I'm trying to get my wife to pull it up now. I don't have a computer in front of me.
Oh, okay. But you know, I think that speaks to your point, David, that they do have value, and they can be cool in selective breeding. I think that we're kind of there as far as I think that a lot of carpet people that I see, at least people that are known in the community and in the hobby, they really work with really nice lines of carpets, and they try to refine. I think of like Luke Snell with his reds, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Come on, man. They're just, they're crazy.
Yeah, you know? They are spectacular.
Let's see, what else? What was some of the other, what else do we got, Dave? What else you want to hit on?
Hey, this is your show. You should,
No, come on, man. You're the...
well, Andrew, you kind of joined in late to this, and this was your idea, so, I mean, what do you have?
Way to pass that off on me there, Dave. That's awesome.
Wow, nobody has an idea.
So what do you think, Eric?
Of? Of the magazine?
Where the hell's Owen when we need him?
Yeah, right? Here's the let me ask you guys this question. I know this isn't something that's, controversial or anything, but are you guys having a late season this year or what? Are you breeding anything?
If I was breeding things, I could tell you an answer.
Oh, you got nothing breeding this year. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I don't have any pairings going right now.
No? How about you, Jason?
Out of the two pairings I have going, I mean, I'm hoping. I have to, as I said, I'm at the hospital right now with my son. So once I get home, I got to double check. I was looking at Tuna 2. She's my diamond cross. Yes, I do have crosses. And she
so
was...
Lost chickens.
Yes, and she was looking pretty thick and going into a pretty deep shed, so I'm hoping there. My other pairing, I did a Balin Red Tiger to an HCQ Jag Sib, so maybe that might have taken. She was looking pretty thick when I checked on her yesterday, so I'm just hoping I get something this year. But it would probably be, as you said, late season this year.
Okay. Hey, Dave, I got a question for you, too, since you kind of have you started back up in carpets again and you got a pretty decent collection going. Where are you taking your little niche of the hobby? Where do you see your business going and your breeding pairings? What are you shooting for?
Well, I used to do a lot of Eerie and Jaya stuff, and I'm going to dabble in it a little bit, but I think I'm mainly going to move towards Coastal Jaguars and Designer Jaguars. So that's what I'm looking at right now. Hopefully next year, the first part of my Diamond Jungle Jaguar project will start off, maybe. We'll see.
Okay.
I'd like to start up a reduced pattern Eerie and Jaya project soon. And maybe when my K2 Eddie boy gets here, we can figure out if he's going to get the job done in a couple of years. But I'd like to make some Eerie and Jaya Jag looking normal, pure Eerie and Jayas. I think that'd be really cool to see eventually. But yeah, mostly just normal coastals and designer Jags.
Cool. Do you see yourself getting into any like albino Jags or caramel zebra Jags or anything like that?
I really think I'm just going to stick with Diamond Jungle Jags as my designer project. I love the beauty in them. Ever since I saw Gamma and Gamma 5 on Morelia pythons, I lost it and knew that I wanted to give John a run for his money in the future. So that's where I'm taking that. But no, I'm not a big morph guy. I don't want to add as many, different morphs into the Jags as possible. I just want to make my fucking either like Diamond Jungle Jags or normal Coastal Jags.
Okay. All right, cool. How about you, Andrew? Where's your collection going?
Honestly, it's a little up in the air. I started with some of the classic jungles. I tend to like the more banded looking individuals. I have in the past sort of stayed away from striped jungle projects. But there's been a couple pictures up recently on the forums that were just absolutely ridiculous. And, I forget who it was, but one just about turned me, in my tracks. I did go ahead and get into some high percentage jungle jags. I've got a really nice zebra as well. And I thought about going the diamond jag route or into some of the morphs, the albinos and all of that. But lately I've actually started swaying back. I'm so enthralled with the jungle itself. I mean, just that one simple animal, you know, I don't feel like I'm satisfied yet. You know, I've got Leary lineage. I've got, you know, hair. I've got. So I have highlighter represented. I have some, you know, scattershot exotics here. I've got, you know, I got a lot of stuff over here, but I don't feel done. I don't feel, you know, I need some Shuet. I need some Turner. I don't have any VPI. I'm not satisfied even with my jungles yet. I don't know how to move on, you know, if I'm not where I want to be yet. So it's just, I'm sort of going crazy in that respect. So I don't know yet. I mean, I've fallen victim to the inland bug, and I still want some Darwins, and you know, God forbid, I may even pick up an IJ. You know, I don't know. Don't, I mean, that, I hope that doesn't go public. But but anyway, you know, I wanted to get into the morphs more and more, and now I'm sort of backing off of that a little bit. So I don't know, but I'm sure I'll get some albinos eventually and, you know, get back into the morphs. So I'm all over the board.
Let me ask you guys this. It's coming from I've talked to Nick about this a lot, and I know a lot of people say that they're – do you see, you know, when the prices, some of these morphs come down and combos and such, do you see them taking off? Do you see that more and more people wanting to get into them? And I'm not necessarily talking about – throwing as many genes into a carpet as you can. You know, I'm thinking of, for instance, let's say you take the granite jag, you know, and you put, you refine it with some PC blood in there and then throw caramel on top of that. You know, do you think that people, that's going to turn people's heads and say it comes,
you know, if I may, let me speak into that. I think the answer that I would say right off the bat is no. I don't think that's the predominant factor. I don't think it has anything to do with price. If you look a lot of the, you know, at the animals out there, especially using the ball python market, you know, the price has nothing to do with it. I think that face time for this species, I think that more people becoming aware of the species, more of the myths, you know, you talked about the myths earlier, you know, those being debunked. Seeing more publications, more, you know, the more the public sees, you know, the beauty in this, you know, in Morelia, and not just carpets, you know, all of Morelia, I think that face time is going to be what does it, you know, because people will fall in love with it just like, you know, just like we have, and it had nothing to do with price for us.
Sure, but I guess what I'm saying is, do you think that more people would get, like, for instance, you know, it's a lot easier, like, look at the jungle carpets. You know, your average jungle carpet on the high end is probably, what, $500, maybe, most? You know, it's like in the $300 to $500 range, which is fairly decent for a snake. And it's, you know, it's not a ton of money, but it's a pretty decent amount of money. So when you have that level to where people get – let's just take the albino. When that comes down to that level, do you see more people wanting to get into that project?
Well, I certainly think that it'll affect it. You know, I mean, I don't see how it would hurt, especially, you know, like I think Jason said earlier, how morph driven, you know, the reptile culture is right now, especially in the States. So, you know, I can only see it helping. I don't think it's going to hurt, but I think the primary thing is, again, is face time and marketing, you know, getting it out there, and letting people see. I mean, you were at this last Tinley, you know, you and I, and, you know, having an amazing, you know, really bright jungle jag or a you know, Brinkley back in October, you know, having an animal like that, you know, by Headhunter on display, you know, or, I mean, that's just, it's so powerful, and it draws people over, you know, so I think that's going to be, it's going to be important, and that's what this show does, it's what the magazine is you know, hopefully going to do, and the forum. So I think the morphs are going to help, yes. But I think it's more than that.
Yeah. I think of, you know, we're talking about Morelia, and I can give you an example of one where I don't even – there isn't even a morph, maybe one or two in the complex, but scrub pythons. I mean, they're just freaking awesome, and I just love them as their beauty, not a morph or anything, you know what I mean? I mean, if you look at a Moluccan python, it just they're – especially when you look at it in person – you know, I hope that my hope is that with the magazine, radio show, the forum, just like you just said, all those outlets to where we're pushing Morelia, and people want to work with the different species and try to establish them in captivity. I think you're going to see, and I know some people disagree with me on this, but I think once more and more is bred in captivity, I think you're going to see these animals start to calm down. I mean, look at retics, look at blood pythons. The more and more that they were bred in captivity, the more and more they became more docile, I guess you would say. You know, because scrubs can be a handful, but, you know, they're just beautiful animals, you know.
Don't you think that a lot of what that was, you know, wild-caught animals or animals that were, you know, in poor health, and so they're you know, their temperament was, you know, was shaky, or, you know, people who simply misunderstood them and, you know, perhaps did not. I mean, I see that as just simply a, you know, being the fact that it's captive bred, you know, and the fact that people understand more about them now. I don't know how you could in a few, you know, in a few generations, you know, change the temperament so dramatically. So that would be interesting. I guess that's my, that would be my input on it.
Yeah, I guess you're right to a certain extent, but, you know, as of working with scrubs, I have ones that were captive bred, and I have some that are wild caught, and there's definitely a difference. I don't know, it's not like the Barnecks that I have been, they're not multiple generations. I do have some Barnecks that are captive bred that are just pure evil, but, you know, I think that... That's just breeding.
Not that we want them misunderstood, you know. I mean.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I think
my pair of Barnecks are dark as can be. So
I think you know, some snakes are just, you know, it's an individual thing. You're gonna have some snakes that are very docile and some snakes that are mean. And I think that when what you may be hitting on, and maybe I'm hitting on the same thing, is like when you take something like retics, don't you think that if they found one that was a little calmer, that they probably bred that to another one that was calmer? And then I believe that those kind of things can be selectively bred. Maybe you guys disagree with that.
No, I think if you can make that, I mean, I think a good argument is with dogs. I think if you can make that argument successfully with dogs, I don't know why you wouldn't be able to do that with reptiles. What I would say is that I think people have been watching for that trait and breeding that way with dogs, you know, for a long time, especially, you know, several species in particular. But I don't know that, you know, the Bob Clarks and the, you know, the Peter Calls and, you know, people like that, the Brian Sharps, I don't know if, you know, those breeders have been breeding all these years based on temperament. I think it's been mostly about, you know, about the morph and about, you know, whatever's most beautiful. So.
Right. I don't know. I think maybe you're right to a certain extent, but I would think that if I was working with a snake that was 15 plus feet, I would want the calmest one I could get.
Oh, definitely.
You know? But I guess if you're trying to make the next set morph, you're going to use whatever you got. So I guess there's both sides to that. So what about the – I know, Jason, you had said something earlier about racks versus tubs. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I kind of use both. I mean, my smaller snakes, they're in racks and
– I'm sorry, I said racks versus tubs. I mean racks versus cages.
Racks. I mean, as I was saying, my smallers are in racks, and my adults, they're in cages right now. But once I can afford bigger tubs to get those, I'm putting them all in tubs. I like the rack system better. It's not just because of, oh, I think they don't need a cage. No, they probably do great in a cage. It's space restraints. And that's my honest opinion. If you can only fit Well, Eric, your room's a prime example. If you can only fit so many snakes in your room in cages versus tubs, you're gonna do the racks in there.
Yeah, actually, I'm switching over to cages.
Now you change. Oh, that's great.
Sorry. I mean, I keep my males in tubs, but a lot of the pairings that I do, I keep them together year round. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's just easier. And I think my thought, though, with the whole cage thing that maybe changed my mind is the fact that versus tub is that, you know, the whole purpose to me, one of the cool things about carpet pythons and Morelia is the fact that they're out and about. And when you stick them in a tub, you sort of lose that.
Exactly.
I agree with that. I mean, once I personally have the room, I can guarantee everything's going to be in the cage just because I want to see what I've put my money into, and I love looking at my animals. Every day I'm going into my tubs and looking and seeing what I have and just going and looking at my favorites. Well, actually, all of them. Every day. So,
nerd!
I mean, oh, thanks. Like any of you have room to talk.
So, how about you, Dave? What do you keep? How do you keep them?
I actually picked up a bunch of cages from Will Leary that they're bowfiles with a wooden perch in them, and I love it to death. I love it so much more than my old CB70 that I built and used to use. I love walking in and seeing my jungle jaguar or my female jungle, since they're my only two adults right now, laying right in the middle of the perch. They have that like hunting pose. They're right on top of the water dish waiting for a rat. I love it. It's like a little piece of art almost. I feel like I don't know. It's just so damn cool to look at.
Yeah, I can give you experience real quick before I jump to Andrew. I remember the first time when I was getting into carpets. My carpets were all small, so I did keep them in a rack, like a tub thing. But we're looking at 15-quart tubs because they were all young ones. I remember driving up to Luke Snell's house and walking into his room, and he had the cages all along the wall, and seeing his adult carpets out and about, and just being like totally blown away. That just sealed the deal for me. It was, I don't know, it was so cool to see like an adult carpet python just sitting in a cage. I think he had some that were sitting up on top of like their hide boxes, and you know, some that were perched, and you know, seeing his chondros, and it was just it. That just sealed the deal for me. Morelia was it. So
exactly. Like I remember when I got into Morelia, I was actually leaning towards the boa route years ago, and I picked up a book called The Art of Keeping Snakes. I believe the author's name was Felipe Vastroli. I really hope I pronounced that right. I'm sorry if I didn't, Felipe or whatever your name is. And it had a bunch of pictures later on in the book of just carpet pythons perched on this branch, almost like a chondro. And it was a velvet black jungle, fluorescent yellow. And I stopped and said, I want that. I want a room full of that. Perches, cages everywhere with just beautiful carpet pythons. And that's what hooked me with Morelia. I wanted to see them on branches, on display, all around me.
Awesome. I agree. That is a cool book. I like that a lot. Andrew, how about you? How do you keep yours?
I currently have most of my stuff in animal plastic racks. I will be going to caging, and I've been on and off for a couple of months now. I've been pestering Ed Lilly over at Constrictors Northwest. I think I'm going to be going with his caging. And honestly, the primary reason for me is the radiant heat panels. I think that if for my situation, like I don't have a dedicated reptile room right now. So it is a little bit more difficult for me to keep the ambient temps exactly where I want them. And as such, I found the racks to be not quite as efficient or effective as I want them to be. I mean, they hold temps, they hold a hot spot. It's just not quite where I want it. So I think I'll be switching most of my stuff over to to Ed's setup and getting some radiant heat panels and working that way. And, you know, that'll kill two birds with one stone because then I'll be able to see the animals as well. So.
Cool, cool. Well, there actually is a caller on the line here. I don't know what they want to talk about, but let's see. Hold on. Caller with the 901 area code. Do you have a comment or a question?
Hey, how's it going? It's Eric. It's Eric Simmons. I was actually calling, getting on to what you guys were talking about, the catches, bred pythons, and how they seem to calm down. One big thing is imprinting. When you take an animal and yank it out of an environment where it's barely surviving, you've essentially acted as a predator for this animal. And you've imprinted on this animal, all big things that pick me up are trying to eat me. And that sticks with an animal for a long time.
Okay.
Whereas in a captive environment, they're seeing you virtually every day, that you're touching them virtually every day. You bring them their food. Probably not a defensive reaction. I mean, like, I've got 20 carpet pythons, and I can even reach in with my 7.5-footers, pull them out anytime I want, you know, in shed, out of shed, you know, middle of a meal. And, I mean, I haven't had a bluff strike at me in probably 6 or 7 years.
I think that's a real good point. I mean, I can see some imprinting going on just with my wife. I mean, she can strike from about 7 feet away. So.
Nice. That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah, so and
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, between that and, you know, again, they're not in that active wild environment where they're having to rely on their instincts just to get through every single day of existence. You know, they're pretty much on cruise control their entire life.
Right. Right, that's true. So what do you think? Actually, I'm glad that you did call in, because you're a morph guy. Where do you fit on that whole?
I'm like you. I'm weird. Because I'm a Gemini, I can do this. I am a huge purist when it comes to certain lines and certain animals that will never, ever, ever be mixed into my morph projects, and there will be animals specifically bought for my morph projects, and I will produce animals. And when I get siblings, because I will even this year, the siblings I will probably specifically market to newcomers as pets. You know, they're a great animal. You can, if you don't plan on breeding them, even female, you can manage to keep them at about 4 to 5 feet and about 1,500 grams their entire life, because you feed them every, you know, 6 to 8 weeks as adults. They're perfectly healthy. They live forever, because you're slowing their metabolism down. And if you continue to pick them up and treat them like you should, you have a 4 to 5 foot animal that you can pull out any day of the week, hold it like a corn snake, and it's much more attractive than a corn snake.
Right. So you kind of agree with Dave to a certain extent that you shouldn't call them off?
No, okay. I mean, you know, things that I'll call off will be things that, you know, kinks, you know, things you're going to run into, that the genetic anomalies that pop up. That's the only kind of thing I'm going to call off. You know, the other things will be marketed specifically to people, either hobbyists who, you know, are working on a certain project, or, you know, like, you know, because here even this year, I'm going to have caramels potentially that are like 12% jungle, 40% coastal, and 40% New Guinea.
The nerve.
Yeah. Because my caramel zebra is now trying to hook up with the New Guinea jag I got from Dave, and she's a 75% New Guinea jag. He's either from Paul's super caramel to caramel zebra, or caramel zebra to caramel jag pairing, so he's only got about 25% jungle in him at all. So
okay.
You really should be splitting it up there.
What made you put it to the New Guinea jag?
Her color, because as you get to the lighter, about quarter of her body, her patterning coming up the sides actually is already a slight orange. And also they're a bit smaller snake, So for people who, you know, want to complain, oh, carpets get too big, even if I feed them, you know, ungodly amounts, the New Guineas in general stay considerably smaller even than jungles and IJs.
Huh. I didn't know that. I mean, I have a pair of New Guineas, but I didn't know that they stayed smaller than that.
Yeah, they apparently stay really small. They're, you know, on, right around the four to 4.5 foot mark is supposed to be a fairly large one.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that animal is pretty small.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yours that I got from you, Dave, she's only, what, 4 feet maybe, and she's 1,400 grams, 1,500 grams, and she's 6 years old.
Yeah. She is not a large animal whatsoever.
No, huh. She's not. But I can count about 14 fossils, and they're just about the size of chicken eggs. She just had her pre-op shed 2 days ago.
Hell yeah.
Man, I've got all three of my girls are just coming out of pre-op shed, or they just blew over. So if the caramel zebra can get it done with two, I've got an outside shot at making some caramel zebras and a caramel zebra jag this year. And then I should have some pure jungle zebras from my Paul Harris zebra and my 7 foot DPI female.
Cool. That's
But it's way late, Eric, like everybody else is saying. I mean, you know, I might not get eggs till second week of May.
What I think is her pre-lay shed, and she was bred with the caramel zebra. So I got a shot at super caramel zebras,
nice.
Which should be pretty cool. And then the other caramel female I have was bred with my zebra jag.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got a caramel shot at caramel zebra jag. So
awesome.
cool stuff. My caramel female caramel zebra girl wasn't quite big enough, but she's definitely the looker out of the two. So next year, hopefully, she's ready
good.
To go.
Yeah, I'm still struggling with whether to put the caramel zebra with my caramel jag next year or to put my super caramel with my fossil super caramel with my caramel jag next year. So it depends on what mood I'm in that month.
Oh, man. So, cool. Sounds like you got some cool stuff going on.
Yeah, and much better than last year where nothing happened.
Yeah, this is kind of a weird thing. I you know, this season was weird for me because I kind of have that whole not really dropped as low, and the temperature around here is crazy, and, you know, I don't know. It's just a weird season around here. And I know on the East Coast everybody's going super late, so I really think that – I don't know what you guys think, but I think that the outside temperatures and weather really affects those snakes to a certain extent. What say you guys?
When I was breeding carpets, I bred Irian Jayas, which are foolproof. So I wish I could give you more input.
Well, what say you, Owen? Oh, yeah.
Owen cannot breed his Irian. Well, actually, you know what's funny? When I went to Owen's house, he had... His snakes are monstrous. You know, he really has big snakes, and his like coastal girls, you can really see how big they get when they're ovulating or when they're gravid. But with the IJ, his IJ is just tiny. And I went there and I was like, yeah, dude, I think she's gravid. You know, because that's kind of what they look like. They don't really get like. They don't have 37 eggs. You know what I mean? So
I think I finally got mine cold this year. This year, I mean, I had a couple nights where it hit like 63 down here. And, I mean, I got much colder than last year. I've got mine in a separate building outside of my house, though. So I'm a bit easier to control that building than, you know, some of the other guys that don't have that kind of facility available to
them. I got a question for you guys. Do you because I saw this on the forum the other day, and Jason, who bred those IJs, he got all those slugs. Do you think it had to do with the temperature? Do you think that you really have to take these carpets down below 70 degrees, 70 or below?
I don't think so with IJ. Now, I'm not an IJ breeder, but IJs tend to, it drops 2 degrees and all of a sudden, you know, it's like something turned on a Marvin Gaye or something.
Right.
Because they're already going at it. Now, the other carpets, again, last year I got mine down to about 76 and I got nothing but slugs for my females. This year I don't know how the results are, but I got 10 times the breeding from the same male by dropping them down to 70 and below.
Right. How about you, Dave? Well, you said you, what do you take your IJs down to when you bred?
Honestly, I never even got them down that far. It seemed like I would just put them together and all of a sudden they were locked up and the females were gravid. I know he had one theory that perhaps being shipped could cause some problems. I don't know if that actually did affect it, but I would lean more towards that. Erie and Jaya's did not seem to really need the temperature change.
Yeah, I would agree that I think it's the shipping, the stress and such. So, how about you, Andrew? You have any thoughts on that?
You know, I really don't, to be honest. When it comes to, I've never bred IJs, so you know, I've heard the same. You know, just that that they're fairly easy, and that there's really not a whole lot of need for a dip. I do a little bit of a dip, but. You know, I don't see that that with the species we're discussing that it's really a make it or break it type of thing. So,
well, what about just carpets in general? Do you think that does that change? Well, excluding diamonds.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I don't, in my experience and from what I've seen and heard, with the exception of diamonds and. You know, the really odd schedule that, you know, that Bredley seems to have. I don't think there's really a whole lot of, I don't think you really need a huge dip, you know, for specifically coastals, jungles, you know, the Irians. So.
All the more northern species.
Right.
Okay. How about, what's your guys, I'm curious to know what you think of this. What about Southwesterns? What do you think about them when they ever become available in the States? Do you think that they'll be the next big thing?
Oh, yeah.
Of having
a
subspecies?
I think if you like inlands, you'll like Imbricata. That's the way I see them.
Okay.
And if you want to see a huge disparity male to female, that you're really going to see it in Imbricata because, you know, some Imbricata males never reach 400 grams. And that's
right.
The biggest they ever get. The females get enormous, but the males, I mean, you know, you see a 400-gram male breeding a 7,000-gram female, and you're like, what the heck?
that would be pretty funny.
Yeah. I think they'll be bigger, actually, than the inlands, because looking at just the natural variation, there seems to be a much larger natural variation with the Southwesterns than with the inlands.
What do you guys think of the inlands? I have a pair of inlands coming next week. I'm pretty jazzed about them. I can't wait to finally have them here because everybody that I talked to or have had on the show said that there's something about inlands when you have them that they become your favorite carpet. What do you guys
think?
It's
sort of like the blackhead syndrome. You know, you hear the same thing. You know, oh, well, I've kept Womas, you know, for years. I've got a lot of different Womas, but... You know, the black-headed python keepers pipe up and say, yeah, but they're nothing like blackheads. You know, blackheads, that's a whole different animal. And I sort of see it the same way. You know, I got people like, you know, Tim Tindall and, you know, David Diamond and some of these guys, you know, piping up on the forums, popping up and talking about just how amazing they are, just very, very interesting creatures. You know, and I think what's cool, speaking of Tim, you know, he's got his more silver animals, and he's, you know, I noticed a thread lately where he's talking about the animals that have a little bit more red in them. So I think, you know, we'll even start to see a little bit of line breeding going on with inland. So that's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. How about you, Dave?
I'm chomping at the bits to get some. They are the coolest carpet python I've ever laid my eyes on, and I need some at my house. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to happen. I will have inland carpets here in the future.
Okay, cool.
And other than that, he's not really all that passionate about them.
Yeah, you can't feel the love. How about Darwin's? I didn't think. Seems like Darwin's didn't take off as much as I thought they would. You know. What do you think of them?
I think Darwin's are for the most passionate Australian reptile keepers out there. I think most people will see them and say, "Oh, it's a slightly different IJ." I mean, we know the difference, but I mean, how much variation is there really when you look at them? If you're new to this, it looks like a slightly different IJ. That's it. Whereas you look at an inland carpet, it's got weird silver tones. It's got that weird silver arrowhead pattern with like the little red flames creeping up in the black areas. I mean, it looks like no other carpet out there, but a Darwin carpet.
Well, I will say that I didn't even see my first Darwin in person until I think last October when I was at that show, Eric, with you and
yeah.
Julie and David and Luke and, you know, all those
yeah.
guys. And that one that David had, oh, my God. Oh, that was amazing. I mean, just the subtle, you know, muted red tones. And, I mean, it was an amazing animal. So, I mean, if you see it in person, you know, there's definitely a difference. Now, you know, to that beginner, you know, yeah, there's it may not be as exciting, but you know, I think that's what the Southwesterns and the McCaffey and you know, some of the, I mean, that's what these are for, you know, for the keepers that want something a little bit more more exclusive, something a little bit more rare and special and, you know, not mainstream.
Yeah,
I gotta agree with you, Andrew. When we were at Tinley, Dave brought his Darwin, and here I didn't even know that the two that he had are clutch mates to the two that I have coming. And Nick sent me a picture, and man, if that male isn't spot on with the same one that he has,
oh man,
I'm jazzed up, man. I can't wait till that thing comes. But
you two need to arrange a breeding loan. Make more hypo PC Darwins.
Yeah. Well, I have a pair coming, and I think he has a pair. And I think that there might be something there. So I'm telling you what, man, that thing was sweet. And standing at the table, me and David were standing at the table, that snake got more attention than any other one on that table. Hands down. Everybody that walked by that table looked at that snake. That and the Gamma Jack.
Yeah, yep. Shocker.
Yeah. So I think you might be onto something there, Dave. If you can make more jags like that, because people definitely stop and take a look. So it's kind of hard. I noticed that, you know, when I went to Hamburg and I did the Hamburg show, you know, you have the IJs out there, and Owen does a lot of coastals, and they're young. And I gotta tell you, man, it's like nobody, like, you got people that walk up that know carpets or something, or, you know, say take a look at that. You know, Owen did. He usually brings his adults, but at this show he didn't really bring he didn't bring one, and it's a huge difference. I think that's such a huge thing if you're going to go do a show, to make sure that you have an adult animal or something. That I think you hit that on that earlier, Andrew, is like when you're at the show and you know, you have that super catchy flashy animal that just draws people right to your table, and then you just sucker them in, you know. Because carpets are hard to sell, man, when they're young and dull looking.
And that's where I think, you know, the marketing and sales aspect comes in. You just say, you know, you can have your youngster look like this for about 4 months and then just be absolutely spectacular the rest of its life. Or you can have a really good-looking bright ball python for about 4 months and then just have something that looks like a turd the rest of its life.
Out.
And moves about as much, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You're right.
Hey, a great example of that, Eric, those two animals you sent my dad from your red tiger zebra jag clutch,
yes.
He saw something in them. I saw them in person when I went down to his house and thought, those are nice looking, I guess. Yeah. I come down a couple weeks ago. Holy crap. Those things are freaking gorgeous.
Really?
I would never have guessed it when they were that young. They
I don't know I'm going with that, but yeah. Get your stuff back. Take it to shows.
You know, I actually, to be honest with you, I was going and going through my collection tonight, cleaning cages and stuff, and when I opened up that, I have a zebra from that same pairing, and no, granted, it doesn't look like any zebra that maybe you have, Andrew, or you know, you know, anything like that. It's not, it's not gonna wow that way. But the pattern on it was, it's freaking awesome. I just, I don't know, there's something about it I just really dig, and I took a picture of it and posted it up on Facebook. But I think when I breed like, I think of breeding like my red, Luke's red line of jags into that, and making some really nice red zebra jags. I think that's just going to be a home run. I think it's going to be nice. Yeah.
I don't think we've even begun to see what zebras, you know, are going to do to the market. I think we've just scratched the surface. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen there. And I refuse to think that it all boils down to super zebras. You know, I mean, that pattern, that zebra pattern, I mean, people love it. So I think some people are going to go super with it, you know, just for albino supers, ivory, you know, supers like you mentioned earlier. But, I mean, just you mentioned super caramel zebras. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's –
yeah.
I can't wait to see what some of this stuff looks like.
Yeah, the caramel zebra, that's a funny story. When I first was getting stuff in from Paul, I was looking at his site, and I think it was his first year that he made caramel zebras, and I was talking to Nick, and I was, you know, I said, can you throw them in there? And he's like, sure, but you know, nobody really had any interest in them. And man, when you see them in person, they have like, to me, their head, you know how like the zebra has that crazy chaotic head pattern,
right?
And when you see the definition with the red in that, it's just, oh my god, it's just, they're gorgeous. And when
it is,
people.
Is it still an absolute? Yeah, like is yours devil spawn? because mine is just absolute devil spawn. I mean, I love him to death, but it's unreal.
Well, I noticed that the zebras that are just straight zebras that I have, yes, they are absolutely spawn of the devil. But the mixes I have, nah, they're pretty calm.
This thing is just, it's a damn sniper. I swear to God. I mean, it's so damn fast, you know. And I think it lives to eat, you know, drink, poop, and just bite the hell out of me. That's all it is.
Yeah, nice. That's awesome. I do have it.
What do you guys do to your snakes? I mean, come on, my zebra doesn't even strike at me.
That's because it knows you're. I don't know. I got nothing there.
Because you're a dark side,
I mean,
and it wants you to love it.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's a zebra?
Okay.
Yeah. Somebody told you it was a zebra, Jason. It's not really a zebra.
Okay, so I get to yell at Balin on that one then?
Yeah.
It's a chaotic IJ.
Yeah. I have an outside shot at albino zebras this year, and man, will I be stoked if I get some of them. I think that, you know, Nick he saw one in person, and he was telling me how cool they were, and imagine that chaotic pattern. You know, I do like the idea of having an albino super zebra, because I think it'll be a solid orange snake, but I just think that that pattern as an albino is just going to be wild. So.
You know, I'm not too big into the albino, but I will say if there's one cross that will get me into working into an albino project, it'll be albino diamond crosses. I can only imagine what the black of an albino or of a diamond cross would do to the albino. I think you'll just get the most amazing contrast and color ever.
Yeah, I think another one is the citrus tiger. I think that when you make
them
albino, you're going to be – that's going to turn heads. I think that's going to be a cool one. It's that contrast. Even on ball pythons, I see that I think it was Will Bird that bred, like, he calls them like high contrast albinos. And when I was talking to him, that's what he did. He kind of just went and got high contrast normal and bred the albino to it. And the results were, you know, high contrast albino. So
I think we need some albino Bradley Inland Darwin Jags. That's what we need.
Oh man,
that's horrible. I never want to see that.
How about the Brettles, man? What do you guys think of those? I'm just curious.
I think they are so underrated. You know, it's not even funny. I mean, some of the most beautiful carpets I've ever seen are those, you know, real high contrast brick red with some, you know, nice cream in there and, you know, contrasty black outlines. I mean, I've seen some amazing looking Bradley out there. And they're so dirt cheap for what they are. It's a shame.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with Andrew. I mean, it doesn't really seem to make sense. It seems like people want a red carpet python. I mean, we're striving for it in IJs. We're striving for it with the Coastals. Well, we have the Brettles. They stay red like their entire life, and they look gorgeous. I don't think I've seen one ugly Brettles python, no muddied-up Brettles python.
Well, I've seen some stripes out there that look like they have some sort of, like, marble Borneo look or some sort of labyrinth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just some crazy-looking stripe, you know, Brettley out there. And again, I'm not typically, you know, a stripe guy. I'm more the banded or the classic, you know, even with jungles and stuff like that. But, I mean, just some wild stuff out there that's just beautiful.
Yeah, I have some striped stuff from Nick, and I got to tell you, the one would pass as like a reduced pattern type of jag, and then I know what you're talking about with that Borneo sides going on. I have that in some of mine. It's just they're really, really cool. I think they go through this ugly stage for a while, because I got to be honest, I was kind of like, when you get them, they're kind of like these gray babies, and you know, you get them and you're like, okay, they're going to turn out cool, and I'm watching them grow, and then they kind of go through this ugly phase. Caramels kind of do the same thing. I don't know if you guys have seen that or whatever. They go through this phase like it's like all of a sudden they kind of get ugly, and then it's like a light turns on all of a sudden. I remember opening up the cage and seeing my breath, and I was thinking, holy shit, what the hell happened to you guys? Because you're just freaking awesome now, you know, because all that contrast and that red is coming out now, and I should probably post up more pictures of those, but super, super nice. So
I'm going to say something that's going to make all the purists cry right now, but I cannot wait to see stonewashed Brettle jaguars. Has anybody else had the same thought?
The hell you say?
Oh, no. You know,
David, go sit in the corner.
No.
I'm probably going to eat my words at some point, but I got to be honest, like with the Brettle jags, I just don't. Like, I think it's something that you hit on earlier. I just don't see what the point is. I don't see a difference between some of the jags that are already out there and breeding it into a Brettle.
I'll agree with you on the 50%ers, but I've seen some 75% and 88% Brettles over in a lot of the guys in Europe seem to be working with.
Yeah, those diamond Bredley jags. I mean, I've seen some of those and thought to myself, why? It's just my opinion, you know. I'm going to go ahead and qualify here, but, you know, why the hell would you do that, you know? But when you see the animal and see, you know, the combination of the yellows, you know, alongside those rusts and reds, and, you know, it really is a striking animal, so.
And see, that's why Morelia are so cool. We have all these different colors we can just mash together to make the most striking animal in the world. But that's the fun of the designer side. I mean, I agree with you there. I never would have thought it would work, but now when you think about it, you have diamond pythons that have this striking black and yellow or white coloration, and you add a little bit of Brettle to it, and it stays clean. You get that black and a little bit of the rust color, and you've got a gorgeous animal, an animal that would not occur in nature, but, my God, it's gorgeous, you know?
Yeah, I think my buddy Casper Christensen, he's the guy that has that one diamond Brettle jag, and
Yeah.
That thing is nice, man. It's even got blue in there. It's got shades of blue in it, if you can believe that. But that's an awesome snake. I guess if I was going to make those, I guess I have to take back my words. I can see your point with that. So, I don't know. What else? Any other things that you guys thinking about in the world of carpet pythons that strike your interest or bother you?
Yeah, whatever happened to Owen?
He got sick, man. He had to bail. We started talking IJs, and he had to roll.
He got scared.
Yeah, he said he wasn't feeling good, so he had to roll out. I know. I need the the whole for the love of God. That only you can bring. So, I don't know. Is there anything else you guys wanted to hit on, or
who's going to Tinley next week? How about that?
Man, I wish I was.
Yeah, me too. I'm so close, yeah. Too. I'm so close geographically, and I'm just so busy at work I can't swing it this year. I'll be there in October, but I can't make it this year to March.
Yeah, I was. We were supposed to go, me and Owen, and we were going to set up, and I had an issue at work, and I couldn't take off, so I had to bail out. But I definitely will be there in October, absolutely.
I'm going to take pictures of myself in a blast and just post them all over your Facebook page and make you see that you're missing all the fun.
You know, can I just say, too, that, I mean, that is, you know, I know we have a lot of listeners out there, and not everybody's going to be able to make it to, you know, to Tinley or, you know, or Ham or any of those shows and experience Carpet Row. But, you know, I don't know how long a lot of you listeners have been in this, you know, in the reptile hobby. But Carpet Row, what we so endearingly call Carpet Row and all these breeders, I mean, it is really a great experience getting to know everybody and, you know, meeting everybody for the first time. And this community, you know, that we have on the forum, and, I mean, I am totally biased, I'll admit it. But there is nothing like that I've ever experienced, you know, in the reptile community. I mean, there's no posturing, you know, there's no talking behind backs. I mean, it's just it's been a great experience so far, and I'm completely biased, but I don't think there's anything else like it out there. So
I got to agree. I got to kind of didn't know what to expect when I went to Carpet Row. I got to drive up the whole way with Luke, which, you know, picking Luke's brain, driving up to there. And we got to talk other stuff besides carpets and stuff. And what a cool guy, man. He's just a really, really super nice guy. Then on top of that, when we went out the one night, it was like it was everybody that was there. I got to tell you, another cool guy, David Diamond, man. What a freaking awesome guy, man.
He's amazing.
He's such a nice guy. He sold the shit out of my snakes, man. He was like, you know, he was the best.
That's hard to do, too. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah, he was. he was awesome, you know. And, you know, you could tell that he had a whole bunch of passion. Julie, another one, you know, what it's awesome, awesome people, you know. And
Julie was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I went up there with my wife and my oldest daughter, and I'm sitting there, you know, talking to David and talking to you and you know, checking out that Darwin. And I look over, and the next thing I know, my daughter is holding a chondro, and Julie's over there talking to her about it. And I mean, she was just ecstatic. And Julie didn't have to do that. I mean, she walked around the table and, you know, got down on, you know, my daughter's level and was just educating her. And I mean, that my daughter still talks about that. So, I mean, that was a great experience.
Yeah, it was awesome. And yeah, I got to meet you, Andrew. You know, there was I had met who else was there? Howard was there, Mo was there. You know, and I think the best part of it all was you know, even besides the Tinley Park experience, was the fact of hanging out with those guys afterwards and for the whole weekend. And I'm telling you, man, it was just an awesome experience. It really, really was. So that's next weekend. So if you are in that area, I'm just going to throw that plug out there. We have Jason Balin coming on the show Tuesday to talk about what he has going on this year, and then what he has headed off to Tinley and what he has available. I was at Hamburg, and I saw Jason's table. And I got to tell you, he had this red. Think about Luke's red, but in a tiger form. It was freaking sweet, and if it was a female, I probably would have jumped it on it. But it was
I'm guessing
male.
That's related to his like pseudo albino Madame Blueberry creation.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
That thing's wicked.
Yeah, beautiful. Even his jungles, his zebras that he had, awesome zebras too. You know, he's got some awesome stuff. Another really, really awesome guy, man. So yeah, if you're out there, go to Carpet Row, check those guys out, and give them some love, because they'll definitely take the time to talk to you and show you how cool carpets are. So, yeah. That's all I got to say about that. But you're going out there, Dave? You'll be out there?
I'll be out there. Apparently the only person from Aurelia Pythons going.
Oh, man. Are you going to
be able to...
Seriously,
though, we're
going to
make it big. We're going to make it a splash.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, I don't know what else you guys wanted to hit on, but I think that the magazine idea, I'm so glad to actually see it start to roll, and I think it's going to be a great thing for the community and for people that want to learn about carpets, because I said this before that I think that it's a very confusing complex, even outside of carpets, but to know the subspecies and the species and the morphs and the what's across, and I think that this will help educate people all the more, and I think it's an awesome idea, and I'm really jazzed about it. So I don't know what else you guys wanted to say. Maybe you want to say something in closing before we hop off of here, or go for it.
I just wanted to let everybody know that that thread is up on Aurelia Python forums right now. I also put a link in that thread to the original thread from months back that sort of got the discussion started. So if you want to go on there and post on there, please do so. Give us your thoughts, your opinions, different ideas. You can also reach us on Facebook. You can go facebook.com/ParisReptiles to contact me. I know that Dave, if I may, Kelly Herpeticulture, and then Jason, you're still at Boondock Exotics. Is that correct?
Yeah, still Boondock Exotics.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, and you can reach me by info@moreliapythonradio.com. I think it's a, hey, let me ask you guys this real quick. Is anybody coming out to Carpet Fest?
Hopefully.
I'm coming out to Carpet Fest.
Okay.
I wouldn't miss that again. Just for Howard's antics.
That's a good time too. Real good time. So if you are in that area. How about the ICAS? You guys hear about that?
That sounds like a blast, and I'm going to do everything I can to show up.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty cool. Did you hear about that one, Andrew?
Yeah, it'll all depend on work for me. So
okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
I'm once again hoping to get out to that too. So.
Yeah, that should be a good time. I guess, like I said, like Andrew said, if you have anything, go over to the moreliapythons.com, the forum, and look up. What's the thread called again, Andrew?
I have it under general, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm actually out back right now, but I think I just put Aurelia Pythons magazine discussion and input thread or something like that.
Okay.
So you can go on there and check it out. Put in your two cents.
I'll throw a link up on the Facebook page in Aurelia Pick of the Week and Aurelia Python Radio. What about you, Dave? You have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I'm actually reading that thread right now, and several members have all asked that we branch out into other Aussie Python species. And I mean, I know we discussed it. I just wanted to put out that I believe we are talking about including like Liasis, Aspidites, Antaresia, pretty much anything with the body shape of Aurelia. Isn't that correct?
Are you talking about the original thread or the new one I started?
The new one you just started. There were several comments asking that we branch out into other pythons, and I just wanted to put that out there that, yes, that is something we are considering.
Yeah, I think the main thing to think about, too, is that, I mean, the very site that they're commenting on is Aurelia Python forums, you know, and yet we do have, you know, other threads or other forums on there. I mean, we do have Aspidites. We do have all that we can all enjoy and post in and learn from. So it would be sort of the same type of thing, I think, is what we're envisioning, where, you know, the main thrust, the main focus of the magazine is going to be, you know, Aurelia. But I think there's enough interest, not just in, you know, in the breeders and hobbyists and the fan base. But, I mean, I think there's enough interest, period, to branch out that way. So I imagine we'll do something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking at some of the posts, too. it looks cool. Josh Easter saying that. Well, you know what?
I saw.
I got to say this, though. Let me tell you this. When I first started Morelia Python Radio, I was talking to a bunch of people about it, and they said the exact same thing. They said, how are you going to get a show where you just talk about Morelia? And, you know, every once in a while we throw in those species where it's Australian. You know, we talked about Antaresia. We talked about blackheads. We talked about walnuts. We talked about, you know, all different types of pythons. But we've even had blood python show. But we keep going back to that same thing, and the fan base is growing. You know, I see the numbers every week, and people continue to – it's about spreading the word and getting people to see what is cool about this this complex that we love so much, you know. And I think that it's working. So I think to the people that think – that it's not going to catch on. I believe, my belief is, with my experience so far and what I've done with the radio show, I don't think that that's – if it's done right, I think people will catch on to it.
Well, also, I want to go one further as well. You know, there on the – and again, I'm out back, so I'm not reading it word for word, so paraphrasing, but he said something about, you know, it gaining traction, not being able to gain traction, and – you know, I can see the concern, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't think any of us are looking at this as being a large business venture.
No.
I think that all of us are doing this because we're passionate about it and we love it. And hey, if we have 15 people give us amazing feedback, you know, or maybe 40 or 50 people who sign up and just love it, you know, and then maybe 200 or, you know, I mean, who knows? But I don't think any of us are doing this for, you know, a major, major following, you know, or for the business, you know, aspect of it. I mean, we see it as something that we love and something that we want to do, and imagine that others would want the same thing, and we have an opportunity to make it happen. So, you know, we're gonna do that. So
I think it comes back to that whole word, you know, how I love that word passion, but you're absolutely right. I think that we're just trying to show people what we're so passionate about, you know? Hey guys, take a look at this. This is what we really dig. We dig it so much that we were willing to do something like this and put it together, and so you can check it out, and maybe you'll like it too, you know? So I think you're absolutely right there, Andrew. So.
You know, we're not going to have it all figured out on the first issue. I mean,
no.
Come on. I mean, we're going to, you know, it's going to be trial and error. We're going to have successes and failures, and we're going to go on feedback, and we'll do what works and cut what doesn't, you know. But it's going to be just that. It's going to be a project, you know, and we're going to have fun doing it, and hopefully people will benefit from it as much as they do from a talk show like this or from, you know, the wealth of information on the forums. So we'll see where it goes.
Yep, absolutely. Dave, any other anything else you want to hit on?
Yeah, buy snakes for me in the future to everybody.
Oh, man. So what's your Facebook page? Go ahead, throw it out there.
Oh, just search for Kelly Herpticulture on Facebook. I have no life, so I'll put a lot of pictures up. So like it.
There you go. How about it, Andrew? I want to give you a couple shout-outs real quick since you're actually on the show. And a while back, I had asked Andrew to do some banners for me. He did Morelia Python Radio. He did mine, EB Morelia. He did a great job. If you wanted to contact him to have the same thing done, I would highly recommend it. He's a super great guy to work with, and you know, everything was top-notch. And did exactly
what
we asked. And I guess if they wanted to get in touch with you, you said Paris Reptiles on your Facebook page?
Yeah, you can do a search for Paris Reptiles. I think it actually is facebook.com/Paris Reptiles. So,
right.
And I think I have a folder up there of some of the design work. I know I did some stuff for Moana at Mojo's Reptiles, and I did a banner for Owen. More importantly, my passion and love is on that Facebook page. So you know, I've got all my stuff, and you know, my wife does a lot of crested geckos, and she likes the Rhacodactylus, and she's got some leopard geckos as well. So we've got quite the variety on there. But yeah, come check us out. We'd love for everybody to follow us.
Cool. Yeah, definitely go over there. How about you, Jason? Any close
thoughts? We're at a not really. I mean, everything we said, I think we've touched base on everything we're trying to do. I mean, no, none of us are expecting this to be perfect first shot, but we sure are going to try. I'm just happy to see that it's moving forward finally. I mean, it's that dream finally coming to be a reality, and it's just something it needs to be.
Awesome. Very well. And where your Facebook, where is it at?
You could just search on Facebook, Boondock Exotics. Pretty much almost the same as Andrew. We have crested geckos, carpet pythons, also a couple pictures of my non-demonic scrub pythons. So.
Hey, I got a question real quick for you crested gecko guys. How are they? What are they like?
Jason, you want to go first? Or?
A lot of work. I mean, we had a ton more than we do now. We actually thinned out the collection a lot. They're my wife's project, and literally it was every other night you're feeding them, every day you're misting them. It takes up a couple hours a night once you have over so many. So now we're down to 8, and it's easy to do.
Okay. What's your thoughts, Andrew?
Well, way to talk up the species there. That's fantastic.
I guess you went with
I actually really like, and I don't know if anybody else follows them, but you know, the whole Rhacodactylus thing has been thrown up in the air. They're switching around some names and everything, but I won't get into that. This is not Rhacodactylus radio after all. But I will say that beyond what he said as far as the maintenance goes, these things, they don't require much heat at all, so you don't have to worry about some very specific hot spot. I mean, you could keep them in, you know, low to mid-70s constantly, so, you know, room temperature. Their eggs, they first of all, there's no cycling involved. You know, they breed like rabbits, and the incubation is actually at room temperature. So, you know, you don't have to worry about an incubator. You know, you can set them up on a shelf. So, I mean, they're actually, other than the maintenance part, they're super, super easy, you know, to keep and breed. There's a little bit of excitement involved in breeding them because, you know, you can take a couple, you know, nice high contrast pinstriped individuals and out pops something that has no pinstripes at all. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of variability. So they're fun. They're a fun species.
Okay, they always kind of
let me apologize about what I said. Okay, we had too many to begin with. So when you have too many, it's a nightmare. I do have my favorites. I now work with them because my wife's busy with the kids and whatnot. They're actually, once you have an amount, they're actually easy to deal with. As Andrew said, they're kept at room temperature. The eggs incubate at room temperature. I mean, they're just interesting animals to watch, especially at nighttime because, I mean, I got a little bit of light on them, so at night I get to see them. You get these eyes staring at you through their cages at night, and they're just moving around, and they're active. And
they're prehistoric looking. They are super, super laid back, you know, for the most part. I don't know. I mean, they're definitely an easy gecko to like. So I think that's why they've really caught on and have quite a following.
Cool. Yeah, they always kind of caught my eye, but I never really – I'm more of a snake guy, but I've always thought about it. Like, I thought they were pretty cool, and from what I've heard, they're pretty easy to take care of, so who knows?
It's kind of interesting to see some of – you know, like a lot of carpet guys will cross over, you know, and get into Aspidites or Liasis, and I've noticed that a lot of carpet guys cross over into Rhacodactylus, you know, into the Cresties and stuff like that. I mean, besides Jason – you know, another one that comes to mind is Nathan Jameson over at Sin City Gecko in Las Vegas. He's got an outstanding carpet python collection, you know, some hairline, some IJ, some coastal, and he's got a killer, you know, Lichianus and Rhacodactylus collection as well. So, kind of interesting to see the similarities in what, you know, people who like certain species, what they cross over and decide to get into.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So, well, I guess that will wrap us up for the night. We're just about out of time. I want to appreciate all you guys coming on and, you know, talking up the magazine. And, you know, as we have future announcements, I'm sure that we'll have you guys back, and especially when we unveil it, the first issue. So
thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for this, man.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you, Eric. This was fun.
Yep. Too bad Owen wasn't here.
Yeah, I didn't have Owen to pick on. There's like the loss of the night.
Yeah. So, no love for Owen. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. And make sure you check out next Tuesday. We have Jason Balin on, like I said. And after week after that, we're going to be talking about carpet python myths. So we're going to try to debunk them. So I'm going to post up a thread over on Morelia Python forums. If there's anything that you guys specifically think it's worthy of talking about, by all means, let us know, and we'll talk about it and discuss it.
Nice.
And then Arian Florian, I think is how you say his last name, from iHerp, will be on at the end of the month. So pretty cool lineup for the rest of the month. That's all I got. Make sure you I'll post up links to all your guys' Facebook page on Morelia Python's page. So if you didn't catch what it is, you can go over there. You can go to MoreliaPythons.com, and I'll put it over there as well. And I think that's all I got. All right, guys. Have a good night.
All right, you too.
Thanks,
guys.
You too, man.